The Journey by Mary Oliver. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice through the whole house, though the whole house began to tremble, and you felt that big old tug at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with his stiff fingers at the very foundations, through their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn. Through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice which you slowly recognized as your own. It kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do what you had to do, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life that you could save. First, I want to acknowledge that not everyone is a fan of poetry. That's fine. And also, not everyone is spoken to by Mary Oliver's poetry, and I'll hopefully change your mind today, but that's okay. You don't have to have either one of these qualities to be touched by the life of this poet. I know that sometimes I get caught up with the messenger or a form of a message, and I miss the message entirely. Somehow, I grew up in South Carolina, and I'm not really a country music fan, but there can be some really profound and deep insights, you know, besides there's a tear in my beer. Mary Oliver has some precise instructions for life. So if you don't take anything away, I want you to turn over your bulletin and write these down, or just put them in your brain, tap your head and put them in your brain, okay? Instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished and tell about it. That's all you need to know from today. Pay attention. Be astonished and tell about it. Paying attention is particularly difficult. There are so many distractions. Facebook, text, email, snacks. Facebook, 24 hours, news cycle, snacks. I'm talking to my 13-year-old there. And listening. Well, that takes a lot of intention to be a good listener. Instead of planning ahead what you're going to say in the next 5 seconds, can you really listen to your spouse, your child, or listening to the world? Are we merely recording what we're seeing, taking a picture for social media so we can text a friend? Are we feeling, paying attention to our connection with the world? The way we share breath with those around us right now in this congregational building, the way the light plays against the chairs or sparkles in the little or not so little children's eyes while Reverend Stephen was asking them about school, the person with the morning bedhead that crawled in here and needed a word, the person gripping their coffee cup so tightly and praying that the caffeine will kick them awake after a long night of tossing and turning. There are so many gifts to noticing. We might notice that we're doing emotional eating. We might notice that a friend really needs to talk or find beauty in the park in the afternoon or in the sunset. Mary Oliver was a largely reclusive person and granted few interviews. I was lucky to find that Krista Tippett, who produces On Being, interviewed Mary Oliver. And if you get a chance, you'll want to listen to her podcast. And this was when Mary Oliver was 80 years old. And from this interview, I felt like this big window opened up into my understanding. You know, like Reverend Stephen said, you know, we've read her poems in the back of UU hymnals, or you might have heard them at funerals and weddings. I know I use them a lot. But to hear her voice, the voice of the poet, was something different. Mary Oliver is beloved to Unitarian Universalists for many reasons. And one of those is I believe that she deeply was shaped by the roots of our very own religion, the writings of Transcendentalists such as Emerson, Thoreau, and Walt Whitman. She especially lifted up Leaves of Grass. Her writing invites the reader into a deep connection with life, with being present, with paying attention. She lifts up finding grace in the natural world, learning from the deer, the fox, the morning star. It has a sense of place, a sense of wonder. She was born in 1935 in Ohio, and she won a lot of prizes for her writing. She lived and wrote for five decades in Provincetown, Massachusetts on Cape Cod, until her partner and the photographer Molly Malone Cook passed away. And she experienced illness, so she went down and she went down to Florida, and it was really funny how she talked about Florida. She said, "I'm really trying to learn to love these mangroves." You know, when you've lived in a place for so long, she had to learn to love the trees of a different place. She started writing poetry when she was around 11 or 12 years old. She thought she was terrible when she started, but she kept at it. And she said, "With my pencil, I traveled to the moon and back a few times." For Mary, writing was a chance to remedy what was wrong with her life. She could record the beauty and connection she experienced to remind her of what was important, what it was like to be alive. When Krista Tippett interviewed her, she asked her if there was a spiritual background to her childhood. And when she was a child, she said she had trouble with the resurrection, so she wouldn't join the church. Does that sound familiar? She was more interested than the kids who entered the church, and it was one of the most important interests of her life, and it continued to be. She said it doesn't have to be Christianity. She was taken with the poet Rumi, a Sufi poet, and she read him every day. She said, "I don't have answers, but I have some suggestions." She believed that life is much richer with a spiritual part to it, and that nothing was more interesting. Mary Oliver, much like many of us here, was someone who did not fit the mold. She had a tough childhood in Ohio. Sad, depressed, difficult place. She's many, you know, like we heard of the children at Palmetto Place, who struggled, who tried to find nurture when nurture was not given to her. Walking in the woods of Ohio saved her life. She escaped it barely with the years of trouble that she experienced. She went the entire world searching for it in books and in nature. She was saved by poetry and the beauty of the world. And all these years, she still didn't like enclosed spaces. She walked everywhere with her notebook taking notes, and she would later turn those notes into poetry, much like Emerson and Thoreau, who found beauty and salvation in the world. But there was a discipline to her writing. I know myself as a writer, I'm always mystified by people who can produce and produce and produce. And she talked about it. She said, "Letting out that wild, silky part of ourselves." Now you think about that wild, silky part. She believed that it was like a courtship. If you turn up every day, the process will learn to trust you. The creative process is something important to make room for within ourselves. Within the willingness to communicate, slippery things will come in that you don't plan on receiving. Mary said she received about 4 or 5 poems that she never changed by receiving inspiration that way. And someone said, "It must be great to be able to walk through the woods all the time. You must have a grant or be wealthy." And she said, "Well, actually, I was very poor. I was walking through the woods to find food." She would walk through and she would, you know, gather food. She would fish. In her walking, she gathered mussels. And through her environs, that is what made her rich. The way she wrote, you would think she was a millionaire, right? Every leaf, every ray of sunshine touched her, moved her. And with that, that was all she needed. Mary iterated that poetry is old and sacred. It is a community ritual. Poetry can be quoted as if it is a prayer to be remembered. Poetry is close to singing. She wasn't certain about what happens after we die. She believed that everything is energy and we go back to those little pieces of energy and that then we're something else. Maybe it isn't like the hierarchy of angels, but the world is mortal and it dies. It becomes something else, kind of like a rose bush planted on top of the grave of a dog. The question and wonder were never truly satisfied, but it's intriguing. No matter what one believes, she said, it shifts. It has an effect upon life. Mary wanted us to know that the journey itself is important, and not to get so caught up in where we're going, but pay attention to where we are. You know, I don't know how many of you think about, you know, okay, I got a bill to pay, I got to take my child to the doctor, I got to do these things, and you miss a rainbow. You miss this profound thing that happened in your garden. You know, that stupid flower that wasn't going to grow grew in the cracks of your bricks. Something wild and precious happened, but you were too busy going that way that you didn't notice. Mary Oliver wrote in an essay, when the high school I went to experienced a crisis of delinquent, I experienced a crisis of delinquent student behavior, my response was to start out for school every morning, but then I would turn most mornings into the woods themselves, with a knapsack of books, always Whitman among them. My truancy was extreme, but my parents were warned that I might not graduate. But for whatever reason, they let me go on my way. It was an odd blessing, but a blessing all the same. I wonder if you've had days like that where you've gone through the whole day and wondered what happened. Mary Oliver tells us that no one yet has made a list of places where the extraordinary may happen or where it may not. It might be here during joys and concerns. It might be at your cubicle. Where will that joy happen? You know, I think about this as I'm entering, you know, my 45th year. And I think about, what am I doing with my life? I've tried to start walking. We got a new house in a neighborhood that has some good walking. And when you have 90 inches of snow in the winter, summer is precious in Wisconsin. It's not hot here. Everybody does stuff all the time. I was very confused when I moved up there because people are busy. They bike and they do stuff. I'm like, why are you cramming all this stuff in summer? Well, there's a reason. And so walking for me is important because it helps me inhabit my body. You know, I'm easily seduced, like a lot of Unitarians, by the world of ideas. You know, I can think and dream, but to be in my body, that's also important. You know, I find solace in books and the mountain of words. Just as Mary said, she found salvation in her books and writing. I also experienced that. She wrote, I learned to build bookshelves and brought books to my room, gathering them around me thickly. I read by day and into the night, and I thought about perfectibility and deism and adjectives and clouds and foxes. And this is the hard part. I locked my door from the inside and leapt from the roof and went to the woods by day or darkness. She experienced abuse in her childhood. She didn't have someone looking out for her, except for Whitman, the woods, the fox, and the deer. You know, all of us seek to rectify the wounds that we try and recover from, whatever those may be. I know when I was little and I was having a hard time, I would rise in the morning when the sun rose, and I would go into the pine woods behind my house. And it was such a grace to watch the mist rise over the river, the sun cracking open a new world, a world where tadpoles inhabited mud puddles before disappearing into the heat of South Carolina summer, where homemade forts were refuge and the promise of blackberries and honeysuckles made the days sweeter. Where Mary was molded by her self-education of Emerson, Whitman, and others, I cut my teeth on Robert Service and the mythic worlds of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, reading aloud Shakespeare or reading books in a makeshift spaceship in my closet. You can make a spaceship out of your closet if you didn't know. You can, you know, those publisher sweepstake clearinghouse stickers, you can put those in their buttons and they'll take you to Mars, I promise. I was able to build different realities and find beauty. You know, it was the time of the Cold War. You know, it was the time of rainforest disappearing. Reagan. Reagan. You know, we are formed deeply by our early years, and we spend a lifetime breaking ourselves open and experiencing things so that we can figure out who we are. That's why I come south every year, not only to see family and friends, but to remember, who am I? What am I doing with my life? You, Mary Oliver, believed that everything has a soul. And I also believe that. I think that everything has a piece of the divine in it. This, 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 this. And if I believe that, that calls me to act differently in the world, doesn't it? I have to treat people with respect, treat my environment with respect, tell the damn hotel how to recycle. Okay, I was in Irmo, and people were throwing grits and all the stuff into the recycling bin. And so I went up to the desk and I said, can you please put up a sign and tell people how to recycle? This is making me sad. Because I want to recycle and I want to put my things into the recycling bin. It was in childhood that Mary Oliver discovered her belief in God and her skepticism about organized religion. Nature, however, with its endless cycles of death and rebirth, delighted her. Walking in the woods, she developed a method for taking notice of whatever happens to present itself. Like Rumi, another one of her models, she seeks to make spiritual life, mingling it with the concrete, an encounter with a deer, or in the short life of a gull that she saved, struggling with whether it was a good idea to keep this gull that would have died on the beach. Was it a gift to put it in her bathtub and nurture it back to life, only so it would die again? Was she selfish to enjoy getting to know that gull and the personality of that gull? She wondered. To pay attention, that is our endless and proper work. In this poem, Summer Day, she asked the question, who are we? What is holy? And what will we do with the gift of life? Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? The grasshopper, I mean, the one who's flung herself out to the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is, but I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day long. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it that you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? You know, we don't choose what happens to us. We have house fires. You know, if I got cancer today or tomorrow, would I say that I had lived in ways that made me catch my breath with beauty? Have I lived in ways that honor my connection with the world around me? Have I lived up to my longing heart? Have I reminded myself that I am enough, even when I feel caught so short and insufficient to the task? You know, we have three tuxedo kittens that we adopted this summer. They're really cute. And they also get in under your feet, so you have to pay attention. And I think of Mary Oliver, you know, when my kitten Fairy puts her head in my coffee cup because I walk away. Or when I came back to my book that I've been writing, and you know, one of the kittens had typed into my novel and luckily not erased it. Mary Oliver writes, I am one of those who has no trouble imagining the sentient lives of trees, of their leaves and sun fashion communicating, or of the massy trunks and heavy branches, knowing it is I who have come as I have always come, each morning to walk beneath them, glad to be alive and glad to be there. There is a presence that holds us in nature. There's a presence that holds us in places like these. That love that we talk about, you have your covenant love, is the doctrine of this congregation. Well, that's something that holds you, is tangible, it's real. When we pay attention to it, when we go visit people in the hospital, when we show up, when we show what our beliefs are, when we talk about ICE, and we talk about shootings, and we talk about all the things that are going on in our world, and we try and make a difference. Mary Oliver kept a stash of money in her desk, which she called floaty money, where she would help people in need quietly. She could help someone with the rent. She helped a young girl with braces and an old friend to get a car. But it was always anonymous. And it was in these last days of her life that she found these everyday gifts and beauty. And she had an old typewriter where she would write, and it would go click-clack, click-click-clack. And she would turn it back to the center, click-clack, click-clack-clack. I can't imagine writing always on a typewriter, but this is what she did. She had a daily practice. So what is it that you're going to find on these last summer days before school starts or before the busyness of fall comes in? How will you pay attention and be astonished? It was already late enough in a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds. And there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Amen and blessed be.